Are you ready to dive deep into the intersections of technology, law, and business? Catch the Tech Intersect podcast on our new Advantage Evans YouTube channel. Whether you're connecting on the go or binging episodes from the comfort of your home, you'll never miss a moment again. Plus, you'll experience all types of exciting shorts, special events content, breaking news lives, and the comprehensive learning series. Subscribe today, hit the bell for notifications, and enjoy podcast videos and more. Use the link or search for Advantage Evans on YouTube to find our channel so you can watch, learn, and engage where insider meets impact. See you there.
I think it has a role to digitize and improve as things do improve, but I don't expect it to necessarily keep pace with the innovation we see in DeFi or in crypto. We've seen what happens when you remove regulation, you do something completely outside of that kind of world. It does create breakneck speed change, but you also get hacks, frauds, and scams. So I don't think traditional finance can evolve as quickly, but I think what's been incredible about this journey is we've seen how crypto and DeFi has been doing things that traditional finance can't do. Their job now, I would say, is to try and integrate as much of that as they can in as safe a way as they can.
Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner, and I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now, and it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. In this episode of Tech Intersect, I am really, really excited to welcome Ian Horn to the show. He currently serves as EU Head of Content for Money 2020, which is celebrated as Europe's most exciting fintech show. And prior to Money 2020, Ian worked at Citywire, a financial publisher that basically he served as head of the UK audience development team. He was also host of the Wealth Tech podcast show and writer of the Wealth Tech weekly newsletter. And Ian is also the writer of a forthcoming book, Why DeFi Matters. It's a book that presents a broad discussion about DeFi and the future of finance and money itself, which is a really important topic in order to understand the point of cryptocurrencies and crypto assets. A fundamental appreciation and understanding for money is critical. And Ian brings us into that world. And the book gives us the context for the rise of Bitcoin and then Ethereum and ultimately decentralized finance or DeFi. And that really explores the realities of non-fungible tokens, also known as NFTs, certainly the metaverse, and the financial components of it, as well as the role of TradFi in central banks and digital finance. We will talk about all of that and more in a moment. But first, Ian, welcome.
Hi, Tanya. Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And that's a fantastic summary of my career as well.
Oh, excellent. Good. I'm really fascinated by your background, too. I usually start from the point of where my guest is, and we'll still do that. But I really do want you to bring in, you know, we all have this rabbit hole moment, or the moment that brings us personally and professionally to this point where we want to tell the world about what we've discovered. That's an important part of your origin story that led you ultimately to be the EU head of content for Money 2020. But let's start there. Talk about Money 2020, how it helps shape conversations in the fintech space.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been at Money 2020 now for almost a year. I had the pleasure of joining about 5 days before the Las Vegas show last year. And my role is on the content side of things. So I work on the Amsterdam show that we have, which is, you know, one of Europe's biggest and definitely most exciting fintech shows. The job that I've got is to look for the biggest trends in payments, banking, traditional finance, but also Web3, DeFi, anything relating to that, cybersecurity, AML, you name it, anything relating to money and payments and banking. I'm looking to stay on top of that and deliver content and sessions and discussions and presentations that really bring the subject matter to life. And also For the many people that attend, and they're from the biggest companies in the world all through to the most exciting startups, I'm trying to stage conversations and, again, presentations that will really make people think twice about what they're doing, improve what they're doing, and really leave the show with an experience. And we call it a show as well. I need to say that. It's not an expo. It's not a conference. It's a show. We're trying to attack every single sense that you've got. And that's my role, to try and do that. So it's a really fun job, really cool thing. And as I say, I've been doing it for about a year now.
Yeah. How did you find your way to the world of cryptocurrency?
My job prior to Money 2020 was I led a networking team in the UK for financial advisors and wealth managers. I completely fell into that job, right? I finished the university. I had a sociology degree, which wasn't necessarily going to get me into finance, but it's something that I love doing. And this opportunity opened up to basically travel across the UK and meet financial advisors, the ones that run businesses and invest money on behalf of their clients. Now, I didn't know much about it, but it sounded like a decent thing to do. So I ended up doing that for about 7 or 8 years. And it kind of accidentally, because I didn't have much intention when I applied for it, but it became this incredible job where I got to speak to the leading investors and the leading business owners of these investment companies. And more importantly, I would say, you know, financial planning companies in the UK. And I got a real insight into how money is managed professionally. Partly that was a really fun thing, and I got to meet some really inspirational and really interesting people. And the other side is I got to see everything about that industry, the good things, the bad things. That led me to a realization that we had these businesses being run by people that are very relationship driven. They're good business people, and the industry generally is good. But one thing that was really lacking was technology. The conversations that were happening around technology were kind of non-existent. There are huge paperwork processes in place. And actually, to a point, traditional finance in places kind of thrives on inertia. So I saw this and I wanted to kind of tackle it. So I started writing alongside my role about all sorts of things, the rise of AI, the rise of financial planning portals, basic software, anything that will help people to manage their money more efficiently, to better understand their finances. And honestly, I think there's such opportunity in the UK and also globally. You know, it's a massive opportunity there. And it really sparked an interest in fintech. And then crypto came about for me because I realized I've gone about this a really long way, Tonya. So thanks for your patience.
No, this is the rabbit hole.
Okay, yeah. So it absolutely is. So crypto for me came about, you know, people only really started talking about it in 2017 when Bitcoin started shooting up. And prior to that, I'd heard about it as, you know, it's something you'd read about as being used for crime and illegality and all the rest. But suddenly financial planners, and this again, I can speak to the UK here, they were having clients turn up, speaking to them and saying, what about Bitcoin? Should I invest in this stuff? And their reaction to it was really interesting. And it wasn't just Bitcoin eventually, you know, as we know, it went on to become other coins, the rest of DeFi. Publicly, and quite rightly, they would discourage every single client from investing in it. Because if you're a regulated financial advisor or a wealth manager, and you tell your client to invest in something highly volatile, you yourself don't understand it, and it goes wrong, you're in big trouble. But I also realized that these people were investing in it themselves. These business owners, these professional investors were maybe not putting a huge amount of their personal resources into it, but they were certainly into exploring it and investing in it. And I felt like there was something more to it. Now, this is just something that really I found interesting. I then went on to host a technology podcast called The Wealth Tech Show by CityWire. Had a newsletter. Basically, NFTs came up a few times. Crypto came up a few times. And I felt like every time I tried to explore the topic, it was really hard to get a proper balanced assessment of what was going on. You get people trying to sell you something and tell you this is the best thing ever. Bitcoin's going to save the world. This is the, you know, brilliant. You also get people that are just so dismissive and say, this is terrible. It's awful. Look at all the scams. Look at all the frauds. Look at all the hacks. And I just don't understand how someone who's entering the space is really going to get a balanced perspective on it. Now, I've got experience as a journalist. I've been a writer for many years. And I just thought there was a real, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but there's a real dearth of material from people talking about what's really going on here. Now, my original plan, obviously I've written a book on it. My original plan was to write about the characteristics of crypto as an investment asset and to try and clarify what that is. And, you know, maybe I should have done that because the SEC is struggling with that right now.
You know, they could use a little help.
Maybe a missed opportunity. But instead, I ended up writing about the actual impact of crypto more broadly on our economy and how it coexists with traditional finance, how people in traditional finance are using it. And then there's a whole bigger conversation around digital assets like tokenization, central bank digital currencies, NFTs. You know, we could go on. But I think the key thing is, I realized that we had a topic here that didn't just speak to technology, but it also spoke to our relationship with money itself. It's a topic that we can get quite philosophical about. And as I mentioned right at the start, I did sociology. I love these questions. I love these things that make us human. And for me, it was something I could really sink my teeth into. You know, if we accept this new currency that isn't controlled by a government, isn't controlled by a central bank or a series of currencies, what does that mean? What's going on with these things? And I just felt there was such a need to research it and to create some kind of analysis that gives people a better understanding of what's going on. And the questions aren't just technology. There's so much more to it than that. But I think I'll park it there because I've gone on for quite a time. But that was my interest in crypto, and it's been such a journey. It really has.
Absolutely. No, I mean, your story, your origin story really captures the energy and the enthusiasm and the excitement around literally watching the development of this new plane. You know, we're building the plane as we're flying it. We are living in a time where we are truly not just seeing the iteration or the tinkering around the edges of a financial system, a global financial system. We're literally seeing the evolution and the revolution. And it's not hyperbolic to say that. It literally is the conversation that we need to have both with retail investors, but also those who, more importantly for me, as an educator, as a lawyer, educating those who will be informing, influencing, and advising them. So I'm so glad that you brought that up, because the next question I even wanted to delve in a bit more is, how do you perceive the role of the traditional financial institutions? And, you know, we could go up to central banks, but since we've been talking about those who will advise retail investors, what's the role of TradFi or traditional finance in this era of digital finance and decentralized finance?
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
That's a really interesting question, and it's a massive question. I think the interesting thing with TradFi, and I say the same thing about crypto, is the question we need to ask ourselves before we go into anything is, who's the person that I'm speaking to here? So where are they based? What are their values? What's their financial situation? What do they want? What TradFi means to you can mean something very different if you're currently in Ukraine right now, or if you're in the UK or the US, or you're in Syria, or you're in North Korea, or, you know, there's all sorts of different angles to it. I think speaking to the system that we're familiar with, I think traditional finance obviously dominates our financial lives. I expect it to continue for the foreseeable future, to be honest. I think the interesting question that we've got with digitization is that we can see these inefficiencies, and the technology has been built that kind of eradicates them. The inclination when you see that is to say, well, okay, let's get rid of this inefficiency. Let's immediately overhaul things. But again, there's a reason why these industries are sometimes slow to innovate and slow to integrate these things. Partly, yes, is because of their size. You know, it's hard to move a large institution quickly and be nimble. The other part is actually sometimes this slow pace of change can be a good thing. It can be what keeps banks solvent. It can be what keeps people reliable. And I think the important thing to remember is the biggest asset, I think the biggest product that the financial world sells, especially the TradFi, is trust. You know, we talk about Bitcoin being trustless. Well, you know, the other thing is trust. Its main role is to not completely fail its customers. So I think it has a role to digitize and improve as things do improve, but I don't expect it to necessarily keep pace with the innovation we see in DeFi or in crypto. These are things that have, well, we've seen what happens when you remove regulation, you do something completely outside of that kind of world. It does create breakneck speed change, but you also get hacks, for, you know, frauds and scams. So I don't think traditional finance can evolve as quickly. But I think what's been incredible about this journey is we've seen how crypto and DeFi has been doing things that traditional finance can't do. They're job now, I would say, is to try and integrate as much of that as they can in as safe a way as they can. And if they're trying to succeed without losing as many customers as they can.
Absolutely. No, they absolutely have a customer service issue. It makes me think here in the United States, our central bank had been working on for some time the behind the scenes back end, really learning the lessons from a system that's better, faster, cheaper to implement what we call FedNow. It's not a currency, although in my humble opinion, I believe it is the precursor to the exploration of a central bank digital currency in the United States, but it really is an improvement. It's taking the idea of peer-to-peer payments from the Satoshi white paper and calling it something different. I think it's like customer to customer. So right. Like completely different than, you know, it's not peer-to-peer. And they accelerated the rollout. It actually happened recently and it wasn't supposed to happen so soon. If nothing else at this point in time in the history of cryptocurrencies is really pressing traditional finance to recognize that there's customer service issue. There is an awakening. There are still bank failures, even though, you know, here in the United States, we see nothing to see here. Keep spending and keeping your money in the banks. To your point, it's an interesting time. In fact, you talk about, I know that your book comes out in October of 2023, but learning about, you know, just reading some of the copy leading up to it, you mentioned that money has, you know, these new features built into it, or crypto has these new features. And I don't think people always understand, because most people in, if they're in the UK or they're in the United States, Australia, sometimes it's like, well, we have a great currency. Why do we need something else? What are the features that you focus on that are really transforming the nature of the value exchange that make cryptocurrencies in general, Bitcoin, ETH, and the like in particular, special?
All sorts of things. I think when we look at that, it's about looking at the potential as well as what's going on right now, because we know that the people who use DeFi currently are largely fintech and finance professionals. So the things they're looking to do with it are generally quite complicated. You know, you look at perpetual futures and things like that, or you look at flash loans and things I don't think your regular person's going to get engaged with. But I think the really interesting thing is if you can use smart contracts, and sometimes it's not necessarily the coin itself that's programmed, it's what you can then allow it to do via programming. There's opportunity there for insurance, for lending. You know, we see it in particular with things like staking and all sorts of things. Basically, I think the key thing I'm trying to say is that you can replicate most of the features of traditional finance in a different way, and you can do it via these cryptocurrencies. So the idea that you can do things without there being an intermediary who takes a cut of the money is very interesting. I mean, potentially too, there's the whole thing about privacy as well. I know there's a lot of work going on with zero knowledge proofs, which, you know, for the uninitiated, are a way where you could trade with someone with confidence without necessarily giving away your identity of who you are. I think this stuff's all really, really fascinating. Obviously, you know, you can speak very confidently and optimistically about it. There are some key things that you need to remember, like obviously the value of a coin depends on the strength of its network. It depends on the strength of its coding, or, you know, it depends on all sorts of things. So I'm never going to say to someone, you know, just close your eyes and jump in without doing any research. But I think the key thing is that technology is being built, and it's being built in an open source way as well, which I think is particularly interesting, to basically rival stuff that we've got now, and to do it in a way that lessens paperwork, lessens difficulty, and likely increases access, because many features of the financial system, rightly or wrongly, in many cases, I would say rightly, in many cases wrongly, actually exclude a lot of people. I think DeFi, again, in being decentralized, in not being regulated, can allow access to different types of investments that you just simply couldn't do if you were a regular investor.
Hey, everybody, stop what you're doing and mark your calendars. On October 24th, 2023 at 7 p.m. Eastern, we are celebrating the launch of my forthcoming book, Digital Money Demystified, with a free virtual event. Hosted by best-selling author Minda Hartz, also one of my best friends, expect electrifying presentations, deep dive interviews, unbelievable giveaways, and some surprise guests will come through. For those craving an even richer future of wealth experience, there's more. On the eve of the launch, we've curated the VIP Launch Eve experience. dive into intimate conversations, enjoy exclusive access to pioneering digital money content, engage in transformative coaching, and be a part of a vibrant community. Not to mention the swag that awaits. So, two events, two transformative experiences. Choose your journey as long as you're on this journey with me. Reserve your spot now at advantageevans.com/activate. That's advantageevans.com/activate. This is your chance to be at the forefront of the digital money revolution. Don't miss out. Join me for your first mover advantage. It's interesting what you said, and I want you to say a bit more about access, because as you said, rightly or wrongly, and there are two sides of this coin, pun intended. And at first, because I focus so much on access and inclusion, I'm like, no, we want open access, et cetera. But then my legal brain kicks in. It's like, well, except for money launderers and, you know, illicit actors and all of that. Say more about what you think, because that's immediately what came to my mind.
Absolutely. Because access always sounds good. It's like one of those words like democratization. We hear it and we assume it's good. I'd say always be careful with that stuff. Some things shouldn't be democratized. Like if I'm getting heart surgery, I don't want democratized access to people saying I'm a surgeon. I want
the consensus protocol that said, come on in.
Yeah, it's I'm less confident on that. I think we always need to be careful what we're asking for. Access is just a fascinating one because there's this ongoing, because again, there's no legal system around DeFi, this becomes more of a philosophical debate rather than anything else. But there's always this trade-off between consumer liberty and consumer protection that we have in DeFi. And I think when it comes to access, there are certain things that you can't access in finance. Sometimes it's purely because people don't want you to have access to it.
There's certain proprietary.
Yeah, absolutely. Or it could be a kind of private equity investment where only institutional investors go near it, which might not actually be as high risk as it sounds. It might not be highly liquid, but you know, it's the kind of stuff where actually people could benefit by having access to them. And I'm not speaking of any specific investment here. The other problem you've got is access isn't always good. You know, we saw it again with the 2008 crash and access to subprime mortgages. You get predatory lending and things like that. You could say you were making the lending market more democratic when in fact, you know, it's been shown that these lenders targeted poorer communities, targeted Black and Latino communities as well, in order to give them loans they knew they could never repay so they could sell off the debt as a package to someone else. So again, TradFi has made these mistakes too and done some horrible things too. But I say always be careful with access, because if you've got a regular Joe kind of, or Josephine trading, you know, something really complicated in DeFi, and DeFi's user experience isn't always that good either. I think that's really important to point out. It's not an easy world to traverse. If you say everyone should have access, then access to what? You need to be careful. The kind of questions people ask you about investing in this space probably aren't what a qualified investor will ask. So I don't know how we solve this necessarily, but what I would say is when it comes to DeFi investing, the rules are a bit different. It's not like a traditional investment. It's not like you're buying a share that has an underlying asset or some ownership attached to it. It's all very different. You know, in time, you'll get tokenized assets and things like that, which will be a bit more similar to that. But anyway, convoluted answer. All I'm saying is, you know, access is, it sounds great. And when it's done right and for the right product, it's brilliant. But TradFi does some things really right, and consumer protection sometimes is that. But as we know, there are many instances where that's not a good thing.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, this is interesting because my lawyer brain agrees with 99.9%. And as a woman of color as well, then I always kind of bristle, or I think this is a really good we're not even debating. We are literally discussing the nuances. And I think the crypto space is also guilty, and you talked about this at the beginning of the show, of this binary discussion. And so what you've said is so important. This is not either or. You know, you're talking about the power and the promise, but also the pitfalls and also the reasons that traditional finance has had a slow and prodding evolution in order to balance this idea of financial and technological innovation with consumer and investor protection. Sometimes people will talk about the protections here in the States as being somewhat paternalistic. You mentioned qualified investors. I know a lot of eggheads that don't know even how to put on their pants, you know, right? But they happen to be a trust fund baby, or they're a high net worth individual, and they have the privilege of having the asset that unlocks access is just having money, not being required to have any semblance of knowledge. We presume knowledge on those with money, which can be dangerous because we have a lot of people in positions of power who have a lot of money, but don't make any earthly sense. And so it's this balance. It cannot be a binary discussion. And I think, you know, with power comes great responsibility. This is the whole point of being in control of your own money, self-custodying your own assets. No one I know is taught from childhood to actually do that. We are indoctrinated into a system that says, don't trust yourself, trust us. And I believe that the power of decentralized finance, and I'm interested to your point of view because your book is titled Why DeFi Matters. I think that's why DeFi matters. But talk to me about why you think DeFi matters.
Yeah, I think there's so many reasons. And I think you make such a good point there about people feeling shut out of systems. And I know what you mean. It can sound really patronizing if you say people shouldn't do, you know, X, Y, or Z thing. So I totally hear that. I think DeFi matters for so many reasons. We now have the technology to create rival economic systems to the ones that are run by nation states that have existed pretty much for anyone listening to this their entire lives. I think that's more significant than people realize. And I think what I wanted to get beyond was this whole conversation about line goes up, line goes down. Sure, that stuff's interesting. Sure, that has some relevance. But this technology is actually doing things that are changing the way traditional institutions operate. People are leveraging this technology. And if you Google it and research it, my book has lots of examples of this. Pretty much every major financial player is using the technology right now and finding ways to tokenize things. So that's important. Central bank digital currency is massively, massively important. When you've got 19 of the 20 G20 nations looking at creating their own digital currency, I think those nation citizens should probably have an understanding of what that means. You know, and what's going on there. So that's another massive reason why DeFi matters. And yes, so central bank currency isn't DeFi in the sense that it's not decentralized, but at the same time, it's using the same technology a lot of the time, or most of the time, that has spawned from this movement. And it's also kind of potentially using crypto as a bit of a Trojan horse. Like, you liked crypto, here's our version of it, but, you know, it's your government and all the rest. There are so many reasons why it's important. Basically, we're looking at something here that changes people's personal lives or change financial institutions. And I just think there needs to be a bigger and more open conversation around that. I think the challenge, as you can probably tell with the way I answer these questions, is if you're trying to do this honestly, it's difficult to give really punchy answers. Because I think if I hated it, I could very easily say, well, this is awful for X, Y, and Z reason. You're going to get scammed. You're going to get defrauded. If I really loved it, I could say, you know, Dogecoin to the moon. This is fantastic. Get involved. Don't miss out. This is going to save the world. And that's easy to do. But actually, the real conversation is tougher. And in the book itself, I tried to outline all the pros and cons of things. I'm not necessarily trying to tell people what to think. I think the key thing is to just kind of provide that education and let them make their own decisions based on their own views. You know, there's all sorts of things there. I mean, you talk about access. Another issue I think that's massive and related is inclusion. And I think the major blockchains and the major coins, most research suggests that ownership of those is actually very heavily weighted in favor, again, of white men, of people in professional positions. So I sometimes get nervy and kind of wary when I hear people say, this is your financial freedom, this is the future, knowing that it it will probably disproportionately improve the lives of people that are usually already in positions of power. So I think there's loads of nuance to this conversation. As you say, it's not binary, it's not right or wrong, but I feel like people should understand these things, because before you buy into Bitcoin or Ether or whatever as the future and savior of the planet, of the financial system, there's so much more to consider.
Absolutely. I love the richness of this conversation, and because we both approach this topic from the same point of view. That was exactly my point when I just thought about what do people need as a base, not, you know, all crypto all the time or no crypto any of the time, but in the middle. I really think it's not really about crypto, but it's about the education that is required, you know, the entry point that, you know, setting up a wallet's kind of like setting up an account. And you know, people, if Beyonce said you can have a free front row ticket if you just, you know, buy this NFT, people would figure out how to get MetaMask and fund their wallet.
Yeah.
It would, you know, they just like need some impetus. You know what I mean?
Oh, you're so right. And actually messaging is huge, right? So
yeah.
I couldn't agree more. Like one of the most, you know, successful NFT rollouts was Starbucks using their NFT stamps. And they called it a stamp. They didn't call it NFT. And I think if you get this technology and make it accessible and you give it terminology that people understand, that will help so much. At the moment, it very much is bogged down in technicalities and jargons. And honestly, Tonya, I don't know if you felt the same, but when I set out to write the book, I thought I'm going to write something that blows away all the jargon, makes it really easy to understand. And then as I got about 3 chapters into writing it, I was like,
this is rough. Right.
Yeah.
This is rough. Let me try again.
Yeah, it's really difficult to do that, isn't it? And I hope I did that as best as I can. But I think for your average person approaching the topic, it is, you know, someone who's not been in finance, for instance.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Think it, we'll use it. Yeah, if it's something that gives you access to the front row at a Beyonce show, then yeah, okay. Suddenly, we're all using it, right?
That's
but
right.
Other than that, I don't think we're quite there yet. We're talking about, you know, someone say, oh, do some yield farming. Okay, great.
Like, forget about it. Right.
Yeah. What am I doing here? Like,
yeah.
So I think messaging's massive.
Absolutely. And we'll see it. I mean, you think about when you first got in, my first entry point was really in 2017 as well. And the user interface and user experience, or UI UX for those playing at home, it has improved. I'm not going to say massively, but certainly it has improved. And so what we'll be talking about in terms of the devices and technology and the ubiquitous nature of even onboarding, I think will improve. It will have to if we really are going to march to mass adoption. Also, you know, just will these systems actually support as a matter of scaling? If you bring more people on, it's going to have to scale, and all these really cool projects are working on that. So again, we're at the beginning. Even though Bitcoin came on the scene with the gangster lean back in January of 2009, we're still in, you know, the early innings here. And so it makes it really exciting for me. I think what you and I are both absolutely aligned on is the power of education. Mm-hmm. People will find out how this financial technology will benefit them when they have a sufficient foundation to make informed choices. I actually talk about the prudent crypto investor, which sounds like an oxymoron, like anybody who invests in crypto can't be prudent. Well, you know, to offset really, and this is not legal or financial advice, but if you have, you know, a highly volatile asset and offsetting that with something that's really, really stable and just having a mix and a variety, I learned more about money in these last 6 years now, about myself, about my choices, about my mindset around money, about the lessons formally and informally that I learned from my family, about the nature of perceived scarcity, about not creating a life for myself that trades time for money. Cryptocurrency is a bit of a misnomer to me because it's this, in the United States, taxed as a capital asset. And traditionally, capital assets are the pathway, the gateway to generational finance in a way that just being a high net worth individual will not. Like all of those things came from leaning in, being cautious, but curious, and really saying, if this is here to stay, I better figure it out, and doing that personally and professionally. So, you know, final thoughts just around that topic and connect that to your book and maybe some takeaways you want to leave the listeners with today.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually what you raised there is interesting because, well, for many reasons, but again, if you didn't go near this, then, and again, I used to speak to wealth managers and financial advisors every day of my professional life, and you would have missed out on one of, if not the best performing asset class of the last decade, pretty much.
Absolutely.
So it does make sense to educate yourself on this and to know what's going on. And there are also, as you say, basic financial lessons that hold true regardless of what asset you're investing in. I think the challenging thing you have with crypto, and again, where the SEC is struggling, is how you determine whether or not this is security when the value of something largely depends on its network effects and largely depends on regulatory issues and other things that are outside of the control of even the most knowledgeable investor. But I think there are, of course, things like diversification that you mentioned, which is useful. And also to understand where crypto fits in terms of your entire assets and your entire financial plan. Because no one is saying you have to put all your money into crypto or you have to put none of your money into it. No one's saying that. I think one of the key things that I kind of look at the end of the book, and I think this is potentially a nice point to finish on, is the kind of importance of diverse money. Like there's money that's kind of that lacks utility but is great. Like cash, for instance, can be brilliant for all sorts of reasons. People take comfort in it. People find it easy to use. Again, I mean, if you're a bit libertarian, the tax man might not ever see what you're doing if you're paying in tax, in cash. So, I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why you might prefer cash in a certain situation that aren't tax evasion. But again, digital money has its place. Crypto money has its place. It's just figuring out for you in your circumstances what balance is correct. And again, in your financial system, does it represent you and your interests? Is that a financial system that allows you to thrive and succeed? You have to look at these things before deciding what to do with your own money. And then also, again, people have been looking at crypto purely in terms of making tons of money, where right. Just a general point on financial management in general, it's always the wrong, how much can I make is always the wrong question. The right question is always, what do I want out of life and how much do I need to achieve that? So I would always offer that bit of sobriety to anyone who's looking at getting into this stuff. You know, everyone always thinks they're going to make millions, but also, are you psychologically prepared for that? Because say you make 10x on your investment. I mean, how many people say that, you know, look at a graph and look at, you know, backdate it and say, oh yeah, I would have made 10x. You probably wouldn't. You probably would have made 30% of your money back, and then you would have absolutely sold out thinking, great, I've made some money. Because it's actually terrifying when it's your money, it's actually terrifying. So I think people forget that. To wrap it up, the point with the book is there's so much more going on than just what makes the headlines. Some of the conversations that are going on obviously are exciting and scandalous or, you know, positive or whatever. But the introduction of crypto and DeFi, it is actually a massive, massive development within finance. And I think people should understand it better, know what's going on, and understand the pros and cons of both that system and the traditional one too.
Ian Horn, I am so delighted that we are connected. I have loved this conversation. I think we're going to help a lot of folks. I wish you well on your book journey. We are on the same one, focused on the same month. So I think there's a lot of synergy here. I think Absolutely. The listeners need to hear from us again. So we're going to tee that up. You know, it's a little teaser. Excellent. All right. So before we get out of here, let people know where they can learn more about you and your work.
Absolutely. So anyone's welcome to reach out to me on LinkedIn. My name is Ian Horn. Again, the E is silent at the end of Horn. And the book is available at KoganPage.com/DeFi. Use the code DeFi20 for 20% off.
Outstanding. All right, Ian, it's the first but not the last. I'll see you back there on the LinkedIn, and we're going to get some stuff together. This is a great conversation. I want to continue it if you're into it.
100%.
Thank you so much for listening to the Tech Intersect podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love it, please tell the world. If not, go ahead and tell me. And in either case, drop a comment or ping me on social media at IPProfEvans with the hashtag Tech Intersect. And finally, a quick reminder on digital safety. There are a lot of scammers out there impersonating me and others, and I need your help. Now hear this, and remember, I will never slide into your DMs to say peace and blessings or hey, and I will never reach out to solicit your time or your money on social media, like ever. I'm not a trader. I am an educator and an attorney licensed in 4 states. Thank you very much. I'm here to inform, inspire, and empower. No cap, and definitely no Forex. So be careful, make good choices, and remember, I developed an entire free masterclass about the topic of digital safety in the crypto space. So check out secureyourcryptobag.com for more information. That's secureyourcryptobag.com. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.